This is the Rick Smith Show.
Last night we talked with Keith Pocheck from the North Carolina Ninth about the upcoming election there, or the fraud election. But evidently the Board of Elections in North Carolina today filed an order concluding, I think what we already know, that the election in the 9th Congressional District there in North Carolina was corrupted by fraud, improprieties, and irregularities so perverse that its results are tainted as the fruit of an operation manifestly unfair to the voters and corrosive to our system of representative government. They went on to say that a new election is necessary, not only in the congressional contest, but also in two local contests caught in the long shadow of uncertainty caused by absentee ballot fraud, funded principally by Mark Harris, for Congress committee. So not only the North Carolina 9th going to be up, but two local races. And like I said yesterday, Harris should go to jail. A whole bunch of those people, lock them up. But we'll see what happens. Let's find out what's going on around the world and in Washington, D.C. Justin Duckham, Talk Media News. Justin, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, great to be here. And, of course, speaking of lock them up,
All right, lock them up.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, so just
or him at least.
A day full of fraud, a day full of, calls for locking them up, and, of course, a day in which we saw Paul Manafort be given an additional 43 months to his sentence, and triggering a lot of panic over here in D.C. as a lot of us had to basically hunker down and do math, which was something that nobody was really expecting to today. So this ended up equaling, in total, about 90 months. Then you had to take into account, that 30 of those are going to be served concurrently with the previous 47 months he had.
Right. So he got 13 months.
Already realizing. Right. Yeah. So, after all of that, it looks like he's going to be spending about 7.5 months. And then, of course, you have to take into account that there is about 9 months that he has already served, which is going to count as credit. And, either way you look at it right now, it's certainly not as long as a lot of people thought it was going to be. Both of these counts for conspiracy had about 5-year maximum sentences associated with them. But either way, this is the longest sentence that we've seen handed down in the Mueller probe so far. And that is, at least saying something.
Yeah, look, I expected longer sentences. I'll be quite honest about it. I was expecting, somewhere in the 5 to 6 year range. Today, I think one of my listeners pegged the over under at 6 years, and I would have taken the under. I just didn't realize it would be this far under. And look, 13 months to me, I don't know if that's a great thing.
This especially this didn't necessarily meet the same level of outrage that we saw last time around when we saw the just under 4 month sentence coming from the Eastern District in Virginia.
Yeah.
That was something, of course, that was for bank fraud, tax fraud, and carried much more weight. But still, when we've been having this huge national conversation about FARA, about misrepresenting yourself, about illegal lobbying on behalf of foreign governments and whatnot, it's interesting to see that, that only carries a sentence of about, 60 months total. So, an interesting lesson for everybody involved. And then, of course, as soon as that wrapped up, almost seconds after, we saw saw New York responding with a 16-count indictment against him as well. So his troubles are nowhere near over. He hasn't begun his sentence, and it looks like he could still face some additional charges and perhaps convictions over things that the president will not be able to actually pardon him for, which, should cause a bit of a headache for the White House.
But Trump came out today and said he hadn't thought about pardoning him, which I don't believe. But he said he hadn't thought of it. So if you're Manafort, you got to be feeling rather chafed about right now.
I mean, it's certainly interesting, and Trump has been all over on this. You know, he has continued to say, I'm not talking about it. I'm not thinking about it. The only people who are talking about it is, you know, the media. But at the end of the day, he has refused to take it off the table time and time again. He has kept it up there. And then on Monday, we actually saw Sarah Sanders, the press secretary, I guess maybe letting it slip a little bit that this is something that the president is still weighing, saying that he is going to make a decision on this when he eventually comes to it. You know, in order to make a decision, generally you have to weigh certain options, and that would seem to absolutely contradict what the president said. So either way, he's staying mum. But, you know, the appeal of a pardon certainly got a lot less rosy now that we know that, you know, there isn't really a magic wand solution to absolutely keep Paul Manafort out of jail, or as some people have started suggesting, you know, keeping him in jail just until after the 2020 election and then, you know, using your pardon power immediately after.
Yeah, still, at the end of the day, here's a guy who went from the, you know, the rarefied air up there at the top to now being in jail some 9 months now and going to spend a good better part of another year and a half, too. You know, this is not good. Not good for him.
It's not. No, I mean, this is this could have gone in a lot of different ways. You know, we could have obviously seen him in jail for 8 years, but you know, we also have this judge, Amy Berman Jackson, who is going to be dealing with Roger Stone as well. You know, this is the same person who's overseeing that trial, and you know, ultimately. This doesn't bode well for him either, especially now that he continues to basically just step in it.
Yeah, no, I mean, at the end of the day, this isn't the slap in the wrist that Papadopoulos got or any of the other ones. This is substantial time, as someone, as a friend pointed out to me. While, you know, I think he should have gotten more. The reality is white-collar criminals rarely get the kind of sentences that, you know, poor criminals get. If Paul Manafort didn't have a great legal team and all kinds of money, you know, he may be doing, you know, several years. And as our mutual friend Bob Ney pointed out, Bob got substantial time for just a $3,000 or $4,000 missed item on a report, you know, one little thing, and he got substantial time where Manafort just there's a lot here.
Yeah, that's actually a. That's a pretty interesting point. I haven't actually talked to Bob about that. But, yeah, I mean, again, this is something where you really need to take into account what lesson this is being shown to a lot of others in Trump world, both with the sentencing and the president's reaction.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're just going to have to continue to watch things, you know, very closely as these items develop.
The lesson for me is if you're going to do a crime, do big ones. It's when you do that little stuff that gets you into trouble, like the guy in Philadelphia.
He tried really hard. This was a lot of tax fraud.
There was really a lot of tax fraud. Like I said, if you're going to go big, so that you don't, I don't know. But I point out the guy in Philadelphia who had the audacity to commandeer 3 peppermint patties. He spent over $500 days in jail waiting for trial. You know,
yeah.
3 peppermint patties get you 500 days before you even get a trial. Yet this guy, never mind. It is what it is. Let's move along. Evidently, the FAA and Trump have decided to ground the big Boeing birds.
Yeah, exactly. So this was something that came as a bit of a shock today. The president has previously been dragging his feet on making this announcement, even as we saw a lot of members of the international community and aviation authorities overseas making similar decisions to ground these planes, the Boeing 737, 8X or X8 and X9, much earlier than the U.S. did. And the president also shared some insight into how he came about that today, saying that this was a difficult decision. And then when pressed on what exactly made it difficult, citing that Boeing is such a great American company, one that has such a stellar track record when it comes to safety, and all but admitting that this was a decision that, you know, to hold off, and it was something that was putting American lives at risk in order to protect, you know, one of the massive titans of the military-industrial complex, yada, yada, yada. And that should probably give people a little bit of a pause.
Yeah, I'm look, I started reading some stories about pilots, you know, who were telling their stories of, you know, so when you engage autopilot, you know, the nose wants to take a dive, you know, a bunch of this stuff. And you start going, you know, why does it take a couple of planes falling out of the air for us to do something? How come these complaints weren't listened to sooner? How come they didn't, you know, patch this stuff, fix this stuff before you start seeing stuff smash? And look, I'm not ripping on air travel in this country, much safer than virtually every other mode of transportation. But when you've got something like this where people are complaining, this should have been addressed a while ago.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth noting that the previous new aircraft that Boeing released before this went for about 18 years or so before there was ever an instance of a fatality or, you know, a crash like we saw take place on Sunday. And in this instance, there have been two within the span of 6 months. That's, you know, very troubling to say the least. At that point, you really have to wonder what exactly is going on. And, you know, the fact that there was an effort to stall this decision, I wouldn't be surprised if this is something that ends up coming up on the, you know, new robust level of oversight that we're seeing coming from the House.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see this play out. But here's the thing. I mean, when you there are some there are like 350 of these planes that are in service around the world. And when two of them fall out of the sky, that's a pretty big number.
Those aren't good odds. I mean,
no.
Generally when you speak about air travel being the safest form of travel or whatnot, when you start getting the numbers like that, that certainly changes the calculus, at least for these, you know, aircraft. And I don't feel like I'd be comfortable, you know, riding in one anytime soon.
Yeah, and here's the thing. I'm actually shocked Trump made the right decision.
Yeah. I mean, this came around the same time as Canada. He said that this came simultaneously, so... You know, this could have been something, and he said himself he didn't need to make this decision. This, he was very obviously kind of reaching for a pat on the back. But, yeah, he could have certainly put this off a lot longer than he did. But either way, it's still just a very strange case.
Yeah, he needed his attaboy for doing the right thing. Jesus. Crazy. Let's move along. California. Evidently, California is stop. I didn't even know California still had the death penalty, to be honest with you, for them to halt.
So we had Gavin Newsom today, the governor of California, signing an executive order that would basically halt the death penalty, saying that it is irrevocable when you carry this out, that it's irresponsible, that it is basically a waste of money overall when you look at this, and thus preserving the lives of about 700 death row inmates, which actually equals about a quarter of the entire death row population for the country. So this is a pretty big deal. What makes it less of you know, a groundbreaking move, though, was that there haven't been executions in California since 2006. There have been a myriad of legal challenges that have kept that from going forward. There are about 20 who, you know, basically could be affected by this if those challenges are ultimately resolved, which is why he said he did this today. But as it stands right now, this is one, largely symbolic, and two, something that kind of falls in line with what we've seen from Gavin Newsom so far as a, you know, figure on the American stage. He first came to, I guess, the larger public imagination in 2004 when he started moving forward with same-sex marriages in San Francisco, something that was also symbolic. So, you know, somebody who acts out of principle will make gestures like this out of principle, but also somebody who could run the risk of racking up some pretty considerable, you know, pushback, especially considering California has brought this to the ballots before a couple of times. The last one was in 2016, where voters didn't just vote to oppose a moratorium on the death penalty, but also voted to essentially speed it up. The president is weighing in on this, and a lot of conservatives are also kind of piling on, as we can tell right now, some within his own state. So this is probably going to be an issue that isn't going to be going away anytime soon.
Yeah, no, I've had a couple of really interesting conversations on this. And for me, look, I'm not opposed to, you know, retribution. I'm not opposed to, you know, look, if something, you know, somebody did something to one of my kids, I'd be hunting them down. And you know, I've said before, I'm all in favor of vigilante death sentences, but I fear state-sponsored murder. I just, I get that rage. You know, you touch my kid, my wife, whatever. I get that. But to have the state with its power, you know, decide that we're going to kill somebody because, you know, they had a prosecutor who maybe was overzealous. You had, you know, cops who maybe a little easy with the evidence, and you have public defenders who were just crappy lawyers. If you could actually have innocent people go to jail, and oh yeah, we already have. So for me, you know, you go back to the beginning of our country and the idea that, you know, 1,000 guilty people should go free before an innocent man goes to jail. That's kind of where my mindset is. You know, especially when you're talking about the death penalty, something as final as that.
Right, and especially when you look at a lot of conservative rhetoric over the years, you know, the entire push for privatization is built on this idea that, you know, the government is corrupt, the government is fallible, the government is just makes terrible mistakes all the time, yet you should still trust the state in this instance to weigh in on matters that are literally life and death. It's an issue. There's obviously been a lot of big pressing concerns when it comes to the death penalty nationwide, when it comes to, you know, the drug cocktails they use for some of these instances, the just sheer questions over how much this is costing for each inmate. And, it looks like he was taking this into account and I guess realized that this is going to be, you know, probably a bigger issue in the coming years, particularly as, you know, more people are paying attention to, you know, not just those issues, but also the fact that this is an unequal system. This is one that is discriminatory and probably, frankly, just isn't sustainable in the larger picture of things.
Yeah. And finally, did you see the vote in the Senate here today that they approved a measure to force the U.S. to withdraw from Yemen?
I haven't seen that yet. I must have that on my way out. That's just great. Good times.
And look, Trump has threatened to veto it. So there you go. Always fun and interesting days. Justin, I appreciate the time. Good talking with you.
Hey, thank you so much. You have a good one.
You as well. Our good friend Justin Duckham, Talk Media News. Quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. Listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come